1600 UTC. On today's call, we have Christine Durain, Lori Schulman, Michael Graham, Stacy Chan, and Susan Payne. From staff, we have Arielle Liang, Barry Cobb, Julie Hedlund, and myself, Andrea Glandon. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and to please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. Thank you, and you may begin.
Thanks, Andrea. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and thank you all for joining here on a Friday. We really appreciate it. So the goal is to try to get through the survey for the brand trademark owners, and I'll put a link again into the chat. But first, perhaps as an overarching item, I think we talked on Wednesday about how we could perhaps, since it's a lengthy survey, break it up in sort of a topic areas, allowing survey takers to pick, the sections they wanted to take, perhaps setting up with a password. And I know it's not a lot of time has passed since Wednesday, but I'm wondering, Stacy, if you and Greg had any further thoughts on the feasibility of doing some kind of bringing up of this particular survey, allowing survey respondents to take sections of it or to come back to it. And perhaps also have them be able to see a PDA ahead of time. I'm sorry to put you on the spot.
Sure. Thanks, Julie. This is Stacy. We did have a chance to talk at least preliminarily about those ideas, and we think that they're good ideas. So we're happy to pursue the idea of, sharing a PDF preview of the survey. Also, along the lines of cutting up the survey into pieces, an option would be early on in the survey, asking the participant what topics they're most interested in, giving feedback on, and then there would be skip patterns worked into the survey. So, depending on what they answer, then they get exposed to those sections of the survey. Those are all great options to try and cut down on the number of questions that the respondent sees.
Thanks so much, Stacy. And Christine, I know this was a question you raised in particular. Did you or does anybody else have any follow-up questions for Stacy?
No, I think that's good at the time. I'll just be interested to see how you come up with it. I'm sensitive to the fact that I don't know that I like the idea of posting, like, which topics are you interested in and do you want to take a survey on, and then just sort of, like, letting the path go as much as I mean, I'm not the expert, but I can't decide whether just providing multiple links to take two different surveys is cleaner and just makes it seem like it's a little less optional. Take these two surveys is less optional than which topics do you like. I mean, we know they'll pick the topics they like. We're not going to get into that now. So I won't waste time on it. I'll be looking forward to seeing what you recommend and what you come up with. I'm happy to dive right in on the survey things.
Thanks so much, Christine. Well, why don't we go ahead and get right into the survey. If I could ask you to use the Google link, the link to the Google Doc, which is then in the chat. And what I will try to do is pull out areas where it looks like we have questions that need to be answered as opposed to things that are just perhaps minor edits. The first edit I'll note, though, is and Michael, please go ahead.
Yeah, a couple overriding things in going back through the survey and the comments here. One comment that I had or one reaction was the way that we're phrasing this survey, where we are referring to you, the individual and such, and wondering if that shouldn't be in reference to the company. It's sort of a universal thing, so that, for example, Q2, just looking at that, it would be where is the company for which you're responding, and then define that as the company for use in the rest of it, based. And then questions like Q4 would be, does the company own any trademark registrations, not do you or your company, which in that case actually I think is pretty confusing because I might own some individually and I might own some for the company. So I'm just wondering if anyone else noticed or had any reaction to that use of you or your when actually we're asking someone to answer on behalf of the company.
Yes, Michael, and I think Christine did have some comments on that in the document, and I see you have your hand up, Christine, please.
Yeah, thanks. This is Christine. I had similar concerns about referencing you and your company without any context as far as is this an outside counsel, an in-house counsel, the actual CEO. And so I think I agree with Michael's suggestion. The company for so considering the company on whose behalf you're answering the questions. Where are they based? Where is it currently headquartered? Where is it based or whatever you're going to say? In what country? I'm not sure if you're trying to get a different answer from Q1 and Q2, but okay. Maybe. For the person answering, who are you? And then go into the company itself for Q4 and Q4A, that could actually just be one question. How many trademark registrations does the company on which you're responding for own? If the answer is zero, that's when you terminate the survey. You don't have to say yes, no, don't, sure, and then how many. I mean, if it's zero, then you terminate the survey. And then from there, you can just, you know, go from there, I think. So I just building on what Michael had to say. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Michael, please.
Yeah, thanks, Michael, for the record. And Christine, thanks for that. And actually, my first suggestion would be to remove Q1. Wow, gotten rid of question. Because I think the real issue is where is the company located for which you're responding. I don't care where the person, you know, providing the answers. I'm really looking for the owner of the trademark. And then I you know, there might be a way to reorder that. I had actually taken out Q1, moved Q2 after Q3. And I agree, I think, with Christine's comment, just sort of jumping ahead just a tiny bit, where you're suggesting, is it a better question, are you responding to the survey on behalf of your company or firm that owns trademarks or on behalf of a client that owns trademarks? I sort of agree with that. It's sort of the larger question that we might want to face, and that is, you know, to whom is this survey going? Is it going to go to law firms? Is it going to go to companies? I presume it might go to both, but that's for the Greg and Stacy maybe to tell us where we want that clarification. And then I sort of had a question too. I think this was your comment as well, Christine, that I was sort of backing on. Wait, let me go down. And now I'm not sure who it is who is asking. You know, the question being, are we going to ask that outside counsel also can provide the answers to this, or are we going to ask them, if it is a law firm, to provide it to their client to answer? I guess that's sort of a procedural question and maybe a question for AG Group. What was your intent in terms of getting this out to people? Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. So maybe I can ask Stacy if you have any guidance on the audience or who would be receiving this, if that can help.
Sure. Well, I think in the cases of, so I'm thinking of some of the outreach that we had suggested through, say, Deloitte with whoever has registered in the TMCH. Those contacts would be whoever is responsible for having put the record in TMCH. I'm not entirely sure who those individuals are. So I think that the audience could be varied.
Thank you, Stacey. And yes, that does get back to also the other question we have, which is about the distribution channels. But I see we've got two people, and I see we have Lori and then Susan, please.
Hi.
So this was my catch on this question. I wish I had seen it earlier, but I just realized that if you're going to pick out trademark owners the way it just described, you might want not say internal legal counsel. You might just want to say external legal counsel or agent, because they may not be lawyers. A lot of trademark work is done by agents and paralegals who are not lawyers. So I would actually stay away from the word counsel.
Thanks, Lori. And Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks. I think Lori's point is a good one, which would be applicable to the internal legal counsel comment as well. I think perhaps we just need something like, you know, a company employee or something, because the in-house person might not be legal counsel. But I put my hand up to talk about the kind of, do we get internal or external counsel to answer it? And initially I was thinking that we could say if external counsel answer it, we could say something like, if so, you know, that they should provide their answers to all the questions on behalf of, you know, all the clients that are relevant. But as I was going through this, I realized that there's lots of questions here that are about, you know, what's your rationale for putting this, you know, what's your rationale for doing things? Why do you use the sunrise, et cetera, et cetera? So really, I think if we're going to have external counsel answer this, we're going to have to have them answer it, put themselves in the shoes of one specific client and answer it on their behalf with their authority. I mean, otherwise, basically, otherwise external counsel can't answer it, it seems to me. The people disagree with me.
Thanks, Susan. I see, Michael, you have your hand up.
Yeah, and I think that, Susan, you're sort of bringing up, and Lori, too, sort of an initial question, which is for outside counsel. I think I would not want them answering for all of their all of the companies they may represent. But really, if this is going out to them, and I imagine in most cases it's either an agent or a law firm that's the immediate contact for the TMCH, but I would want them to be directed to either answer this on behalf of or to provide this to specific clients for that particular company's responses. And maybe that's another reason for including and changing you and yours and such to the company, so that it's clear that we're not asking for a general sort of how many have you registered with the Trademark Clearinghouse on behalf of clients, but we're asking for each of your clients for them to answer this, or for one of your clients, whatever. But I think somehow we need to signal that perhaps in how this is distributed. And I hope that would address it. And I agree with taking out counsel and either in-house or in-house IP, whatever, in-house IP group or in-house trademark. Agree that a lot of the people who have the best responsibility for the IP in a company may not be counsel. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. And I just a few related comments in the chat. Christine is saying, Susan, I can imagine a situation where an agent or external counsel does this multiple times on behalf of different clients. I think that's why we're asking this to start with. And Susan says, Michael, that would work. So they might complete more than once, but standing in the shoes of individual client companies. So it seems that there's agreement for this to be made clear that we're asking for asking them to complete this for you know, potentially multiple clients. So do we have anything in the document as it stands right now where we set that out clearly at the start of the document? I know Christina's saying, the better question is, are you responding to the survey on behalf of your company firm that owns TMs or on behalf of a client who owns TMs? Would a question like that suffice, or do we need something even more pointed or targeted? I I'm just wondering if we need to give some guidance as far as sort of a leading question to start this off, rather than having an analysis group try to figure out what we're asking.
Yeah, this is Michael for the record, and without having actual language, I think in the introduction that we've set out, I think we could state something that, you know, if you're an outside law firm or agent, please answer on behalf of a single specific clients rather than your something along those lines and give instructions. I think that'd be an appropriate place for it. Then the other thing I was going to ask this, I've gone through and along the lines of changing you to the company, made changes wherever I've seen it. I don't know if it's worthwhile doing that as we go through this. I can certainly point them out, or if that's something that I should submit later, whichever you think would be the best way to work it.
So Michael, this is Julie Hubbin from staff. I think that, given that that's a global change, that's probably something we can wait. We probably, in the interest of time, don't need to call that out each time we see it. But maybe instead focus on the substantive questions. And Lori, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I think that was an old hand. I do have a comment, but it's not on this question, so I'll hold it, okay?
That's fine, Lori. Thanks. Okay, so we've got an action then to amend the introduction, and we're taking some notes on that. And Stacey, hopefully that's enough guidance for you all to get a sense of what we're asking here. And then we're also taking the action to make sure that we do a global change along the lines of, that Michael has suggested as well. And I know you've pulled those up, Michael, so that's helpful, but we'll make sure all those are covered. So, and then I see that already there have been some amendments in Q3. And so another action is we're deleting Q1. And Q3 already has some edits in it asking, are you internal legal counsel or agent/paralegal for your company? Are you external counsel or agent paralegal? And I'm not sure who entered that in. Looks like that may have been Lori.
That's fine.
And Christine, please.
Hi, this is Christine. I don't oppose adding the agent or paralegal, but honestly, my suggestion to just say, are you responding on behalf of your company or are you responding on behalf of a client, I think is shorter. It's fewer words, but I'm not opposed to it, I guess. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Actually, that might be better because it's a little, it just allows for more leeway in responses. If somebody says, oh, I'm not a legal counsel and I'm not an agent paralegal, this way we can sort of capture everybody who might respond. So let's note that change as well. And then on Q4, Christine, I think you have a note. Sorry, so do you or your company own any trademark registrations? Christine says, INTA survey went to in-house lawyers. I think this might be filled in by outside counsel. But Christine, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Christine. This is just that same point, and I think it's the same thing you said to Michael. Whatever we do to fix this needs to be fixed all the way through. You or your need to reference the person on behalf of whom you're entering the survey. Whether you answer that, whether you're them or whether you're their outside person, whatever, that just universal change. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. And noted. And then moving along, Q4A is just changed to approximately how many trademark registrations. And that seems, Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. And so the thing I said a few minutes ago that's not captured in the doc, and I'm happy to go in and add a note, but I think Q4 can be merged into one. Rather than saying, do you own any trademark registrations, yes or no, and then how many, just say, how many trademark registrations does whoever your answer half of own? If the answer is zero, you don't proceed. I'll just make a note in the comments, but I think the point is we're trying to shorten this, so anytime we can take out a question or merge a question, we should do that.
I think that's really helpful, Christine. And Kathy?
Hi, all. Sorry to be late, and apologies if you've already talked about it. But is there a question, what is your company? And given how large some of these companies are, what's to prevent one hand not talking to the other and not knowing that the surveys hit different parts of the company?
We haven't talked about that. Does anybody have any thoughts about adding that as a question? What is your company?
On behalf of what company are you responding is really it.
Yeah, this is Michael Graham. One, I know we tell everyone that this is going to be confidential, but as soon as you ask that question, it ceases to be. And, you know, at least speaking from the companies I know, if an inquiry like this comes in about trademarks, it's not going to go to various places. It's all going to go to one place because nobody's going to want to answer it. And it's going to end up in the IP group or the trademark group. So I think that we're pretty well covered. Is your concern is that different parts of the company would be answering?
Exactly. That outside counsel might be answering as well as inside counsel. So that this may go to, you know, somebody who represents a lot of clients on the domain name side and, you know, just goes ahead and fills it out for different clients. Don't know, but, you know, isn't that something we should catalog and then anonymize, just to make sure we're not duplicating?
Thanks, Kathy. I have a queue. I have Christine, Lori, and Susan.
Thanks. This is Christine. I think there's a couple of things here. One is I definitely think that preserving the anonymity is important. Otherwise, people aren't going to answer. Secondly, that I mean, if you could make it optional, I guess, if you want to collect it. But again, we're trying to reduce questions, not add them, and I don't know what it adds. Secondly, as probably the world's largest company, we've got 13 people here that could possibly answer this question. So I'm pretty sure they'll talk amongst each other. And quite frankly, a survey of this magnitude, it's going to get punted. I don't want to answer. Do you want to answer? I guess you're going to answer. All right, I'll make you answer. I don't know that you're going to – I don't know that – I think it's a hypothetical problem or a theoretical problem. I don't think it's going to actually be a problem. I think Lori can speak to this. But at INTA, too many respondents was not the problem they had. It was not having enough respondents. So if you're going to – I would prefer not to do anything that would limit the number of people that would actually answer the question, the number of different people that would actually answer the question. And I just don't think, even coming from Amazon's perspective, that you're going to get two people from Amazon dying and rushing to answer the survey. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. Lori, and then Susan. And Lori, I don't know if your sound is okay to answer, but please. Not hearing Lori at the moment.
Hi. I'm going to give it a try. I just want to – can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Can you – all right. Yeah, and then I'm going to ask for a dial-out after I make this comment. This is ridiculous. I kind of lost half of what Sue was saying, but I think I got that her response was, you know, like Amazon's so big that there'd be a bunch of people and, you know, they might punt it to each other, so the issue is not over answering, but actually getting someone to answer. That's the last I heard. But then back to Kathy's question, I just want to make sure I understand the question. So is she asking for type of company, size of company? I mean, this is one of the issues, and I'm going to just flag in here with about INTA in terms of asking respondents to identify themselves. We created what we call the Chinese wall between the provider and ourselves so that we wouldn't even know which members answered, because in our experience, without the anonymity, we got 33 guaranteeing anonymity. Had there been no anonymity, I think we would have gotten zero. Many people consider answers to a lot of these questions as proprietary, and they're very skeptical. I had actually a few major brands call me personally and say we'd like to cooperate and help, but we're not going to. We ran this through wherever they run these things through, and said even with the wall, we're not going to answer. So I just wanted to kind of note that for the record. But back to Kathy's thoughts. So what we did there is we did narrow things down to nonprofit, for-profit, and revenue. So there were actually two criteria on here. It wasn't one, like what's your size or who you are. It was kind of both. Are you nonprofit, for-profit, or you're a small business? So there's a few corporate categories you could put there. And then you could also put revenue. And what we found in our survey is among the people who did respond that the the company size, the revenue company size, didn't necessarily correspond to company spend. Now, how that would translate into this survey, because we're not really talking about spend as much as we're talking about some other outcomes, spend definitely impacts whether or not you're going to register in the TMCH or how you might follow up on some other questions that we have here. So what I would say is if we make a decision as a group that we would ask people to self-identify in certain categories, it would be, have to be more than one. It would have to be type, and then I do believe it would also have to be by revenue.
Thanks so much, Lori. All right, and Kathy's saying very helpful, and Kathy says, I don't want to hold up the progress on this survey, and now we have many more questions. So thanks for that. I'm going to move ahead to the next place where I see an actual question in the survey as opposed to just minor edits. So question six, Christine asked, why are we asking this here? Respondents haven't seen the open-ended questions yet, so they wouldn't know. That is, will you permit us to quote anonymously from your answers to open-ended questions? And I see, Michael, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Michael, for the record. And I want to back up some comments that I had on some of these. Apparently didn't get through when I tried to save them with the forms I submitted. So I'm going to back up to Q5A in a moment. But I think 6, I would just remove that at this point. I would just remove that. Anyway, on 5A, and there are a couple other places, 7A is another place where this shows up. We're asking the respondents to do math calculations, and I think we ought to just ask them for the numbers. So not how, what percentage of, but approximately how many of the company's trademarks have been recorded with the Trademark Clearinghouse, and then give the ranges, 1 to 5, 6 to 10, 10 to 20, whatever is appropriate. I think that's the sort of information that I would be better able to provide. If I'm being asked for the percentage, now I have to do division. I'm not even going to do that. And if I get approximate, I've got no idea how good a mathematician I am. So I think I'm much more likely to get answers than we can prepare the percentages based on those answers. Thanks. Oh, and there's also that minor change, any to enough, or enough change to any, which I would suggest in 5B. Thanks.
Great, thanks. All right, so we'll take the action to change that into numbers, ranges, number ranges as opposed to percentages. I'm not seeing any opposition to that. And we'll take out question 6. Question 7, we have the text deleted, which is in order to take part in Sunrise Services Uniform Rapid Suspension or other services. Any issues with, and then some text added in 7A. Trademarks that you have recorded, and 7A has the same comment that Michael has raised, changing the percentages to numbers with ranges.
Right, and this is actually a new hand from Michael, and I made those changes, and the reason is, you know, in Q7, I don't think we need to get into the specifics. We're just asking if they've submitted proof of use for whatever purpose. We can get into the others later. And then added the language that you have recorded, just to be clear there that that's what we're asking specifically. Thanks.
Michael, I'm not seeing anybody objecting to those changes. Just skipping ahead to the next place where I see some text added. Otherwise, these look like these are minor edits. Looking at QB. Which it says, if yes, in which new generic top-level domains did you apply to register your trademarks as a domain name? Are there any issues with adding that text? Seeing I have a hand. Susan, please.
Yes. I'm not sure it's quite the right terminology. I hate drafting on the spur of the moment, but don't we need to be saying something like, did you register a domain in your trademark? Isn't that what we mean? Because it's not, you're not, we're not registering a trademark as a domain name.
Thanks, Susan.
So I would suggest, yeah.
Hi, thanks. It's Michael for the record. Susan, I think, and this might answer your concern, 8B really follows 8, and the language was added just so that this would clearly be connected to question 8, where we're asking, has the company applied to register any domain names matching any of its trademarks during any new generic top-level domain sunrise periods? So, you know, however that language in 8B would be changed then, so it would simply be reflective of that now we're asking for the specifics.
Yeah, no, I get that. It's got it the right way round, registering a domain name matching your trademark. And so I think that's the language we need in 8A and 8B, isn't it?
Well, they're applying to register the trademark as a domain name?
Yeah, well, but they're not applying to register. Sorry, it's really, I mean, this is really splitting hairs, but you know, in question 8, we've said we've used a particular form of wording, which is about registering a domain name that matches your trademark. And so, for 8A and for 8B, it's the same, isn't it? That's, we're asking this.
Register a domain name that matches your trademarks would be the language?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be fine.
Thanks. Yeah, picking up that same language from Q8. And Christine, please. Christine?
No, yeah, I took my hand down. You guys got there. We're good.
Okay, cool. Thank you. You're too fast for me. All right, moving along. I'm just, again, looking for where there's issues. Okay, under the table in Q9, we have a comment from Stacy, trying to avoid uniform domain name dispute resolution policy and uniform rapid suspension should a dispute arise. Stacy, this wording may be confusing to some respondents. Could some team clarify? And Christine is saying, suggestions, proactive measures, avoid reactive solutions like UDRP or URS. And Kathy asked, perhaps delete this. The other options would seem to take care of the proactive options. Thoughts? And Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. So, my wording was just to try to make it so that it doesn't split up, trying to avoid should a dispute arise with the sort of options UDRP and URS. That was the only reason I changed the wording. It basically just switched it so you say proactive measures to avoid and to avoid reactive solutions like UDRP or URS. But I'm taking Kathy's point about deleting. However, if we split the survey and do the sunrise portion, even if we do the reserve names together with it, and then we go and they do the claims later, the claim section, without opening the can of worms about whether or not we should be asking a bunch of questions about UDRP and URS there, which the survey currently does, and I don't remember us agreeing to do that, but we'll get there in a minute. If we split the survey, we no longer have those proactive remedies sort of, or the reactive remedies as part of this first half of the survey. So we might have to discuss this again, because I was all ready to jump on board with Kathy and say, just delete it, we'll get to it. But if we split the survey, we might end up not actually getting this question in relationship to sunrise. We'll only ask it in relationship while they're thinking about claims. So my concern is that taking it out here rather than just rewording it means we won't actually get an answer to this question. Thanks.
Michael, please.
Michael, for the record, and I think, Christine, your comment about possible effects on questions if we split the survey is probably a real good reason to not split the survey. I know it's weighty. There's a lot of stuff in here, but we split the survey. Then you've got the question of, well, what if we're doing a worksheet? Do we split that? I think we've anticipated and discussed these questions in connection with other questions that come along so that we start moving them around, we lose that context. So I think that's sort of a good point from what you were just saying, that would be a reason not to split, although we might, you know, point out that there are separate sections. Thanks.
Thank you. Christine, please.
Thanks. Noting that Kathy's withdrawn her objection, and that's awesome. I just wanted to react to your statement that it might be a bad idea to split the survey. I didn't do a deep study, but I did actually skim through it again yesterday or Wednesday after we discussed splitting, and that is the only question that I saw that could present a problem, other than the question that we ask at the end of Sunrise, which is like, what do you like better, Sunrise or claims or both? That's the only other question that relates to both sections at the same time. So we don't need to discuss this today. I agree with Kathy. We should move on. But before we just throw the baby out with the bathwater and say let's not split it, let's take a look and see how many questions actually straddle, because I only saw the two. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that, Christine. And I think we do have we do want to see what the options are for splitting from analysis group, and so, and based on that, we'll be able to see if there are some overlaps that we need to address or areas where there are interconnections. So thanks for that point. Then we'll retain that item, that one, but with your suggested wording, Christine, in that table. I'm moving along to the next comment, which is in question 10D, where it says, from price how did it affect your ability? From price made me much more likely to register to it, made me much less likely to register, allowed for an open-ended response. So Christine is suggesting how is likely related to ability. I think open-ended is better here. That will let us gauge what is meant by ability. Ability means I have a small company and we didn't have the budget to buy a 10K domain name. It's not an issue of likely. It's an issue of can't, not feasible, possible. So the suggestion is then just to leave this as an open-ended response. Any
wow.
Michael, please.
Absolutely, it's Michael. Yeah, to the extent that we're voting, I think I would take out the Likert scale and leave it open-ended, see what sort of response we get. Thanks.
Thanks. And Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine. Yeah, this is not a hill I'm going to die on. We highlighted the word ability. We italicized it in 10C. And so we really want to talk about sort of the, you know, people even getting a chance to get in rather than just it being awkward or uncomfortable or there was some, like, sort of annoyance. So I think likelihood makes it hard. So unless analysis group can come up with a better Likert scale that doesn't use the word much more or less likely to register, I think open-ended is the only option I can think of. But if they can come up with something better, that's not just changing likely to able, I'm more like more able or less able, then I think I'd be open to it. I just couldn't think of anything else, which is why I came up with open-ended. If Stacey has any thoughts, I welcome them. Thanks.
Stacey, any thoughts?
Thanks. This is Stacey. I think I understand your concern, Christine. One thought is, what kind of answer are you hoping to get? So I see your comments. One thing is like, you know, it just became infeasible. So we could simplify this question rather than having a scale of how infeasible did it become to something like, did it become infeasible for you to register due to the price? Yes, no. Don't know, or something like that. If it's an open text response, I think open text responses tend to be these more qualitative kinds of questions where you're really exploring different explanations for some kind of activity. And I think those are the instances in the other surveys where we've really tried to keep those text boxes in because we're trying to collect that kind of information. Here, if you kind of have an idea of like, yeah, I just want to know if this price made it infeasible or not for this registrant, then we can change the question to be like that rather than using a Likert scale. And just so basically change the question, the answer type, but keep it a closed-ended question, if that helps.
Thank you, Stacey. That's helpful. And Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. So that's what it says in Q10C. Did price affect your ability or if the feasibility to seek Sunrise period registrations at any of your trademarks? And I think seek is actually the wrong word here because it would be to obtain. You can always seek for free. A WHO's lookup is free, or a domain availability lookup is free. Session is, did it affect your ability to obtain Sunrise period registrations at any of your trademarks? So here there's a specific working group point that I'm trying to get at, which is why I think the open-ended question is kind of important, is that we've heard anecdotally from the IP people that, you know, they were faced with these insurmountable pricing hurdles to getting domain name Sunrise registrations, and maybe there were budget hurdles, I think predominantly budget hurdles. So what we want to do is we kind of wanted opportunity for them to complain or gripe or vent or whatever. That's one of the other reasons why I think an open-ended might work, because this is sort of, I'm anticipating like 2% of people will answer this question, the Q10D question. How did it affect your ability? I mean, you could be more specific. Do you want to tell us about how it affected your ability? Totally optional. Don't put anything in the text box. Chances are no one will, because they'll say yes or no and move on. If you would like to talk about one really oddball, awful experience you had, now's your chance. Please tell us about it so we can try to address it. That's, I think, from our hours and hours and hours of meetings, that's one of the things we were trying to dig into. So, yeah, you know, did price affect your ability to seek Sunrise registrations, or even the feasibility of it, is a little bit open-ended. You know, for Amazon, a $10,000 domain name that it really, really wants might not be a limiting factor. For another company, a $10,000 domain name to get a domain name, cost to get a domain name it really wants might be a limiting factor. So I know we've got the Q10C there, and that's fine. We can decide to eliminate Q10D. But how does the group feel about then not collecting information about this pricing problem? Because, let's be perfectly candid, I don't think we should ask pricing problems, but I'm disagreeing and committing to what we've decided as a group. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Okay, so I guess I'm hearing that we're still leaning towards just leaving this open-ended. Is that correct?
Julie?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, my hand's not working. It's intermittent, like the sound. Sorry. But I'm trying to get to what Christine is saying, and now I have an echo of my own voice. Not a good day for sound. Sorry. But does it make a difference to change word to affect rather than ability into Q10D? Leave 10C, but 10D is more about did it affect your decision versus your ability, which would go to what Christine means by 10,000 may not be a big deal for Amazon, but very much a big deal for March of Dimes.
Thanks, Lori. Anybody have any thoughts on that as a change of language? And would we still then leave this as an open-ended question? Changing ability to affect your decision. I'm seeing some typing. No objection from Christine. Let's go ahead and do that, but I think we're still decided that this is to be an open question. Open-ended, I mean. While folks are typing, okay, Michael says ability or strategies. Christine, please.
Yeah, I think we can change the. I'm agree with change. No objection. I'll take the wording that Lori put forward. That's fine. And if you want to keep the Likert scale there, because there's still an open-ended response, like as an option other, you can still include that. I guess I would say then that if you're going to do that, if that's going to be our answer, we need to have one of the choices just be not likely or more likely or less likely, but one of the options should also be completely unable. I couldn't do it because, you know, I just couldn't do it, period. You don't even have to say because, just couldn't do it. And then other, open-ended response. So if we're going to go with a Likert scale, I think you need to add the, like, completely unable. Thanks.
And Lori's agreeing with that. And Susan, please.
Yeah, thanks. Also, if we do have a Likert scale, I think we need to be a bit more precise on what that scale is because, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, price made me more likely, you know, high price or low price. We don't know what they're thinking when they answer the question, so be precise when we're asking it.
Thanks, Susan. And we'll try to capture that in the notes. So in the interest of time, I'm going to try to move along. I'm just seeing some edits in 11 and 12 to delete the following open text field since it will be clear that there's an open text field. And Michael, please.
Yeah, Michael, for the record, I'm just jumping ahead just a tad to 13 because I did have some issues with some of that, whether or not this might be an area that we might be able to take things out. Specifically 13A, please provide us with the names you attempted to register but could not during the sunrise period. That seems to be like a checking question, and again, I'm not sure that that's something that I'm going to be willing or interested in answering if I'm going to maintain my confidentiality. So I wonder if there's some reason for Q 13A that we should leave it in, if anyone wants to argue with it, otherwise to remove it.
Anybody have any objections to removing that question? I'm not seeing any hands up or objections. So we're going to note question 13A to be deleted.
Right.
Do you have any other?
Then,
go ahead.
Well, and
please.
As long as we're on that, so 13C. Which is going into whether or not they contacted the registry operator, and I can see why we might want to have that in, but I'll just put up for yes, no, or discussion whether or not to take out Q13C except for the last if yes, which is do you know if any of those refusals, I inserted that, were due to the string being on the reserved name list. But the rest of 13C, I was wondering if that's something that we might remove.
So then you're saying 13C would be, get rid of 13C, the follow-on first bullet, but retain 13C as the, do you know if any of those, we'd still have to have 13C. I'm not sure I'm understanding you, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, that last part, we'll probably have to rephrase it. But that's really asking, do you know if any of the refusals were based on the string being on the reserved name list, which is, I think is what we were trying to get at.
Okay, so retaining 13C, did you either yourself contact the registry operator to inquire about refused names, and then do you know if any of those refusers were due to the string being on the reserved name list, deleting that the bullet above that?
Well, yeah, deleting everything above the last bullet. The last dark
bullet.
Okay, bullets.
So the last bullet would be?
Do you know if any of those were due to the string being on the reserve name list? Let me see.
Those referring back to, because those refers back to.
Again,
correct.
It goes back to Q13. So this would actually be Q13B, I guess.
Okay, so this becomes 13B. All right, that's what I'm trying to get at. Thank you.
Yeah, and the other Q13B becomes Q13A.
Right.
Okay. Yeah,
okay.
That's what I would suggest.
All right, great. Thank you. Noted. I'm not seeing, let's see, the next place where there's inserted text is Q16.
Hey. No, I'm sorry. This is Christine. My hand is up.
Oh, sorry, Christine. I'm not sure how I missed that. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Yeah, I did not follow that discussion, and I don't understand why we want to remove Q13A. So I mean, or Q13. So I know we're deleting Q13A, which is the name you attempted to refer, and I assume we're doing that to reduce length. But I'm not sure. Can you repeat what we're doing with Q13B and Q13C, and then all the bullet points below? Because I'm sorry that I did not follow. So if you could, one more time, I'm sorry.
I don't think we're doing anything to the bullet points below, but I think what we're doing is we're changing 13, we're deleting 13A. I'm sorry, Michael, please go ahead and describe it again. I'll probably get it wrong. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I wish I could just do a markup and we'd see. So basically remove what is there now as Q13A. Q13B would become Q13A, then Q13C, again, unless there's a reason why we really want this, and I wasn't sure that there was, so I'll leave that up to you, but I would take out Q13C, all of that except for the very last if yes bullet. So that's the one at the very bottom of that dark bullet, if yes, do you know if any of those were due to the string being on the reserve name list, and that would become the new Q13B. That
Thank you, Michael.
Sense, Christine?
Great. And Christine.
Thank you. This is Christine. Yeah, I understand. Thank you so much for going through it again. So here's my problem, and I might agree with you theoretically that maybe some of those questions that don't need to be asked, but we fought hard about this, and we agreed that we were going to ask these questions. I'm not trying to keep it longer. However, there were specific and people that were talking about this process of many brand owners basically said, we wanted to register domain names in Sunrise. We couldn't because they were blocked. We contacted the registry operator. They gave them to us. So maybe the registry operators kept them aside to give away to brand owners. And that's what the QC first bullet gets to. Did the registry operator put their names on their reserve names list? That in and of itself by some people is viewed to be a sort of hostile act. But if they were doing it with the intention of actually giving it away to the brand owner, that's what that first dark bullet gets to, is were you able to get it anyway? So if so, what are you complaining about sort of thing? You know, they did it to you to benefit you so no one else could get it. And if any of your blocks were due to this name being on the reserve names list, I mean, yeah, there's probably a better way to get all of Q13 shorter. It's got to be a better way. Maybe it could be a grid, maybe, I don't even know, but there's got to be a better way, because you're right, there's four questions here and it's ridiculous. But I'm hesitant to just do away with a whole section that we talked about, even if I fundamentally disagree with asking the questions, just because we as a group really decided we wanted to ask these questions.
Thanks, Christine. Michael, please.
Yeah, and that's what I was looking for, Christine. I could not recall why this was there, and you brought it up. That being the case, however, then I would say I would remove the last bullet then. Do you know if any of those were due to the string being on the reserve name list, or rephrasing that because it doesn't make any sense after the Q13C question, it doesn't seem. So, but I would keep that. I just was looking to see if there was a rationale why we had that in there. I mean, I have a feeling it's going to be very rarely answered, but interesting if it is. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. Christine?
Yeah, I'm going to propose a way to shorten it up a little bit, but still get both, because I think if you go up to Q13B, do you know why you could not register during the Sunrise period? Yes. And then you skip way down. Do you know if they were on the, because it was on the reserve names list? Yes. I think you can consolidate that. Do you know you could not register during the Sunrise period? Yes, it was on the reserve names list. Yes, someone else already had it. Yes, no, I don't know. Other, fill in the blank, don't, not sure. Now that gets rid of the if yes, what was the reason under Q13B, and gets rid of the second dark bullet point under Q13C, which still gives us all of the same information, but in a much more concise format. Any objection to that proposal? Because then we don't get less information, we just shorten it up a little bit.
Thanks, Christine. I'm seeing Susan is saying plus one. Christine, good suggestion. And Michael, please.
Yeah, and because I was brought it up, I agree with Christine's suggestion.
And Christine, and I know you, I think you knew you need to go, but is there any, can you send us anything? We're trying hard to capture what you said, but that was kind of fast. Go ahead, Christine.
Thanks. This is Christine. I'm not the one who has to go. It's Susan, and I'm actually typing a note in the column of the doc. So I'm not editing the doc itself. I'm just putting a note in there, so it's right in, right, my whole suggestion will be right in there.
And thank you, and sorry for that. And yes, Susan, thank you so much for joining us, and I know you have to go, and we hope you have a good weekend, and thanks again. Okay, and thanks also then, Christine, for sending some text. We really do appreciate that. Anything on Q14? We've got, or 15, otherwise I see that there's some text added in 16. In 16, the text that's added is owner of the released, sorry about the background noise, the released trademark that matches the, is added, domain name and is recorded in the TMCH is added. Any objections to that? Not, I've got some comments with respect to question 17A, where it says, I was unable to decide or obtain a decision from managers or the client during the sunrise period. The type of sunrise period, start date, end date confused me. Stacey's asking, this wording may be confusing. Could the subteam please suggest clarifying wording or leave it as is if trademark owners or holders are going to understand it? For example, what kind of decision is the respondent trying to obtain? What about the type of sunrise period was confusing? E.g., would you like to ask whether the respondent was unsure that when the end date of the registration window was? Lori, please. Lori, if you're speaking, we can't hear you.
Hold on, sorry. I unmuted the wrong device. what I was going to say is I can put the question into context for people in terms of corporate decision-making, and then perhaps that would help with some wording on the fly. Basically, during the sunrise period and given the sunrise pricing, my guess, based on the wording of this question, is that you may need, and people frequently need, more authorization to either do the spend. Or either, as I said, a lot of the information around domain registration strategy, trademark portfolio management is considered proprietary. So if a sunrise period opens and people either haven't budgeted for it or haven't necessarily included this particular domain in a strategy, the strategy either may have to be amended or the budget has to be increased. So many portfolio managers, you know, contrary to belief, actually operate on pretty shoestring budgets. And so that is how I would, if I were a trademark professional reading this, I am a trademark professional, but I mean, if I were reading this question cold, I would interpret it as I either needed budget approval or I needed strategy approval. But this was somehow outside of the normal range of what would be in my spend or my strategy. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of an alternative.
So Lori, just sorry to interrupt you, but there is actually some suggestive language in here that Christine has added. And Christine did note she thinks the question is fine if it was a problem. People know exactly what it means. If it wasn't a problem, it's not. If they don't understand the question, it was probably not a problem. But Christine added the text from managers or the client. Decide or obtain a decision from managers or a client, indicating that there's an additional sort of need for a decision there. But Christine, you have your hand up.
Thanks. I just wanted to, this is Christine, I wanted to clarify, those are two separate things. So the first bullet point was I was unable to decide or obtain a decision, and then I added the text from managers or the clients, which would be higher ups if you're in the org, or the client if you're outside the org, within that period, during the sunrise period. So that was my modification. So my first question would be if that, you think that's broad enough to cover if I say just from managers or the client? And then we can talk about the second thing, which is the question I think is fine. So what do you think of that language?
Yeah, I'm looking at it. I kind of agree to you. This is an inside baseball question. So if you're inside the field, you're going to get it. And if you're outside the field, it's probably irrelevant. So, I think with your clarification, it may be it's an understandable question if you're hitting trademark professionals, which we are. You know, even to Kathy's point, there may be super small legal departments that may not have the same type of expertise or dedicated staff, but then I would argue they still, and maybe even more so, have to get permission because they'd have even less latitude and smaller budgets.
So is this text that Christine added, do you think that covers it? Does anybody have any?
Yeah, I would say yes. I think we could accept it. I'd be willing to accept it and move on.
And do people agree that the Sunrise's next bullet, the Sunrise question, is okay? People who have a problem will understand what's being asked, and people who haven't had a problem, they're not going to understand the question anyway.
The type of Sunrise period confused me.
Yeah, so Lori, this is Christine. So the inside baseball, so the problem was when Stacy highlighted it, she highlighted both at the same time. So my response appears to be to both. So the third bullet point about the deciding or obtaining a decision, I agreed that that was confusing, and that's why I proposed the change. I think the inside baseball question is the type of Sunrise period question. So if you are taking this survey, and one of the reasons you missed the end date is because you didn't know what type of Sunrise period it was, that's going to stick in your brain. You're going to be like, oh, yeah, shoot, I didn't get it because I didn't know I had to because of the end date or the sunrise or whatever.
Yeah, but maybe. But
I think
maybe
if you didn't miss it for that.
I'm sorry to talk over you, Christine. I just said my hand isn't working so great, so I apologize. Go ahead, and then I'll respond.
Oh, okay, thanks. This is Christine again. Yeah, so I think if you didn't have a struggle with what type of sunrise period it was, you wouldn't accidentally tick this is the reason I missed the registration window date. I don't think you need to explain the question. Either that's the reason because you knew that was the reason. If it wasn't the reason, then you're just going to read past and go, I don't know what that means, keep going, because it didn't apply to me. That's where I'm going with it. Go ahead, Lori.
Yeah, maybe it's as simple as the timing of the sunrise period confused me. Instead of saying type, say timing, because this is a timing issue. Some of them, you know, for all the reasons we know, I don't have to explain that. But so maybe what I would do is if Stacy's confused, I would swap out timing for type. The timing of the sunrise period confused me. Because if you didn't know the type, you're not going to go know the timing. Right? I think people are going to look at timing before they ask what type, if they're not experienced.
And I see that Michael's saying, how about type or timing? And Kathy's saying Lori's language makes sense. Christine, does that sound okay to you?
Yeah, this is Christine. That's totally fine. I think if there's anybody who has a particular beef about start and end date, there's an open text field, and they can say, that was just stupid, in which case there's an open text field for them. So, yeah, I think that's fine. Timing works great.
I think right. The great field is becoming the default, right?
Right. So just moving along, I'm conscious of time. We have 20 minutes, and we've got quite a bit more to cover. So for question 18, aware of any domains that contain strings that are identical to or confusing or similar to any of your trademark clearinghouse registered trademarks, et cetera, Stacy is asking, there was some lack of agreement regarding follow-up to this question. Any follow-up is useful. We suggest leaning towards multiple choice. And Christina is actually commenting on that. Suggest an open-ended follow-up. What, if anything, have you done or are you doing to monitor their use or try to acquire the domain names? And I have Lori and then Kathy. I don't know, Lori, if that's an old hand.
Sorry, is it me? This is Kathy.
Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay, Q18, I don't get. Are you aware of any domains that contain strings that are identical to or similar to any of your trademark clearinghouse registered domain names that were applied for after the sunrise period? Yikes. I mean, that's everything. That's names, dictionary words. Why is that question there? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Does anybody know the remember the provenance of that question?
Hi, it's Michael. I don't have any notes, but I am presuming that that is to test whether or not, or the extent to which, there were registrations that you might object to, but were registered outside of the sunrise period. I'm not sure, though. That would be for the trademark claims where I'd be interested. So I'm not sure why that's there. Sorry.
So I'd recommend that it be deleted just because it's certainly not registering to the extent to which anything's happening. It's just a yes or no question. And I'm not sure its answer is going to help us on anything.
Thank you.
Especially with your response, Michael. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And Christine?
Yeah, this is Christine, and I'm trying really hard to remember. Lori, did you have a hand too?
Yeah, that's okay. Go first, because I wasn't in all of these discussions. I just don't remember. I'm kind of with Michael on this. I can't remember where we were headed.
Yeah, so this is Christine. I want to say that where we were here was something similar to Michael. What we're trying to get at is how effective was sunrise? So did you, if you didn't participate in any, because that's why we added confusingly similar, right? So, you know, did you still have to do a whole bunch of reactive stuff afterwards? I think that's kind of what we're getting at. But to Michael's point, I think that belongs in claims, and I think we should delete it because if I recall, I'm going to scroll down really fast, I think we ask a whole bunch of these questions. You know, Q22 for sure, and that's if you receive a NORN. But, you know, I just think that at some point, you know, this is a URS UDRP question. Has there ever been a domain name registered that you want to argue with? So I agree with Kathy. I think we should delete Q18 and trust that we've done a good job in the claim section to cover the post-sunrise scenario. At a minimum, this doesn't belong here because it's post-sunrise.
This is Lori. I agree, and I apologize. I'm going to just chime in on audio. I can see the changes in Google, but for some reason, my Adobe Connect today, my hand, the actions are delayed, the typing's delayed, everything's like staccato. I don't know how to explain it, but I agree with that.
And thank you, everyone. I'm just, Ariel, if you could just... for a moment, I'm having to switch networks, so it's just going to take me one moment to do that, and then I'll be back on. So pardon me while I do that.
And this is Kathy. I'm frozen, too.
Yeah,
so if my hand's up, it should be down. Oh, this is crazy.
Yeah, I was going to ask, has anybody had, this is the worst it's been in memory for me. My hands are up and down, not when I want them to be. I'm typing things into the chat. They show up literally minutes later. But when I look at my internet connection here at home, I'm not getting oscillation. I am connected. I'm not connecting and disconnecting. So I can't figure it out.
It's a little slow for me. Not as slow as for some of you, but it's a little slow for me also.
Okay.
Well, we can jump ahead if we want, because I think we've already discussed Q21, which is this idea that they shouldn't be ranking sunrise claims either, both, neither, until they've done both. At a minimum, and this is just a note for analysis group, I think if we split the survey, this should be asked twice, and we should take into account that it's been asked twice to the same group of people. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't think you really want to have people rank the sunrise and claims period requirements before they've seen both sets of questions. And I think Greg agreed with that on Wednesday.
Oh, thanks, everyone. And I'm back in. And sorry.
Everyone, this is Ariel. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes, we can hear you, Ariel.
I apologize. I also got dropped some audio, so I've been listening through AC, but I cannot speak. So I rejoined. And just to continue on the document, now we are on Q21. And then, so the question is, please rank the following possible sunrise and claims period requirements. And then there's a suggested additional phrase by Michael for new top-level domain registries. from most preferable to least preferable to for all future new GTLD registries. And then I think there's also a comment from Christine. I made this comment before, but it's all to ask them to rank claims when it hasn't been discussed yet. This question should go last. Anybody have comments, questions?
Well, this is Michael, and while you were between networks, Christine was pointing out that if we do split the two portions of this somehow, that this probably should be repeated. But at the very least, yeah, this should move to the end after we've gone through the questions regarding both sunrise period and claims period. And frankly, if somebody doesn't answer on one of those sections, I don't see any reason to ask them to answer this question because they're not answering on that other area. So if they're not addressing claims period, why ask them to compare it to the sunrise period? But I think this should go, if anywhere, last, and then with the open text field of please explain why. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. That, and I'm back too. And so note that. And I see that Christine has noted that as well. We're splitting into two surveys, and this is a good stopping point for the survey number one, sunrise. So,
and were you still on, Julie? Were you still on when it was sort of agreed to remove Q18?
Yes, it was. Okay. Yep. And we've noted that removing 18. And thank you for that. And so then I think we've captured that on 21. For 22, we've got some additional text advising you that a domain name consisting of your exact trademark has been registered in a new top-level domain registry. Does anybody have any issue with that? And Kathy, please.
Yeah, just that with that modification, and Michael, I hope you don't mind, advising you that a domain name consisting of your exact trademark has been registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse in a new top-level domain registry. Is that, I mean, if we're defining what the NORN is, we should define what it is. And I think that's what you were trying to do.
So what is the wording yet? Because
so,
the exact trademark that has been registered, that I've got registered in the clearinghouse, but the notice is that that identical trademark has been registered as a domain name, despite the notice that went out, correct?
I'm putting something in. Forgive me for typing directly into it, but just tell me if that does it, because it's in there. Advising you that a domain name consisting of your exact trademark.
We're down now.
While you're doing that, Kathy, Christine?
Yeah, thanks. This is Christine. No. It's actually wrong. So it's the notice is that a domain name has been registered, not that a trademark has been registered.
Right.
Now, if you're trying to clarify the question, advising you that a domain name, that is a match of a trademark you have in the clearinghouse, that's fine. But now the question pretty confusing. We might want to switch the wording of the sentence around. Because if you say, do you ever receive a notification, a NORN, advising you, so now we're defining a NORN, advising you that a domain name consisting of your exact trademark that has been filed or registered in the Trademark Clearinghouse has been registered in a new top-level domain registry? That is a long and confusing question. So I'll add another addition to clarify, but
it'll be longer.
I think we want analysis group. Right. We might want analysis group or somebody else to go back and try to fix this question so it's actually understandable.
Fair.
I'm going to ask Stacy whether or not that's something that analysis group is going to be able to do or whether or not they need some more guidance on clarifying this question. Let me ask Stacy if you understand where we're – okay. Christine says, now it is correct but long and complex with lots of clauses. Christine, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. One suggestion here, and we're going to go, let's think about if this is the first question in a new survey, you're not going to just launch off with this, right? Maybe in this section you have an introductory paragraph that says, a notification of registered name is a notification that you receive if you have registered your trademark in the Trademark Clearinghouse that advises you that a domain name consisting of that, that is exactly the same as that trademark, has been registered in a top-level domain registry. Now you've defined a NORN. So now question 22 can say, have you ever received a NORN? Yes or no? And then question 22A, 22A1, et cetera. What do you think about that? If we're going to do two, even if we don't split the survey, we're switching gears here to talk about the claims. It actually makes sense to put a different short introduction here to flag for people that now we're not going to be talking about the sunrise anymore. We're switching to talk about the claims. And if you pre-advise people of your defined term at the beginning, you can shorten up the question 22. Any thoughts of that? Thanks.
I see that Kathy says agreed, and Michael, you have your hand up.
Yeah, and since we're all jumping on each other in the retype, I went in and made a couple of changes. I think it goes to the definition that you were just giving, Christine, but I agree. Let's break that out so that we're defining what we're talking about up ahead and then ask, have you ever received one? And I think that, one, it's a good signal, and two, it also gives us the ability to define the NORN going forward, which was my concern, and not have it become a confusing question at the same time. Thanks.
Thanks, Michael. And go ahead.
Oh, sorry. This is Lori jumping in again. There's too much latency in Adobe for me to use it well. So, again, my apologies. But I agree with what Michael's saying. Absolutely agree with setting context. I think that would make the answers more reliable. Because to be honest, NORN sounds like a Star Trek character. So we need to be really clear. And this also, I would say, goes to some of the points Kathy has raised about accessibility of the survey, which are very well taken, that this may all not be the Christine Durains of the world or the Lori Schulman's answering, but it could very well be people who are not familiar with ICANN lingo.
Great, thanks so much. So just moving along quickly, we've got a new 22AI and 22AII. Does anybody have any issues, questions about those additions? Michael, is that a new or an old hand?
Oh, sorry, it's an old one.
Okay, and Christine says, I edited that up with my comments already, so I'm good. If nobody has any issues with that and with Christine's comments. And I'm just looking down again through the document to the next place where we have a comment. Question 26. Stacey has a question. Oh, wait. Wait a minute. So Christine has a comment on 26. I feel like this is completely new, and I don't remember seeing it except as a small extension of 22. How did we get a whole section on UDRP URFs in here? How did we get to this one? Christine, please.
Thanks. I think I do pretty well at remembering what we discussed and what we agreed on, especially since I ran the claims section. For the love of God, I cannot remember discussing having this big URS UDRP question in here and getting a whole grid out of it. And did you choose UDRP? I know we wanted to know if you filed a UDRP as a result of a NORN, but I don't understand how we got to two whole grids of this. Can anybody recall what the point was here? Thanks.
Yeah, and I see that analysis group is asking that same question. And Michael, please.
Okay, and I think I can give a general answer without looking at any notes. And this is addressing it's going back to that question of exact match, near match, or something match discussion that was going on in terms of, if you filed these things, did you file it against an exact match? How many did you file against an exact match that was part of the domain but not the entire domain? How many were typos? That's what this was getting at. So all of these are addressing that specific issue that was one that we've been bashing our heads against from the day I got involved with the PDP, and hoping to get some insight into that in regard to whether or not the exact match was sufficient for the trademark notice. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. So, others, is there something we feel we need to include? Kathy said me neither. I'm not sure how this table helps us. Again, this is question 26. And Christine, please.
Thanks. This is Christine. I'm trying to be very generous with my mindset here, because I definitely do not want to ask UDRP URS questions here. So, are we trying to get at the scope of the problem? Is the data that the working group really wants here, how big a problem is that what we're trying to answer? Because we want to know how many did you file, and then clearly the second table is how many did you win. So this would show, there were 500 UDRPs filed and complainants won, 498 of them. Therefore, there's a whole lot of bad guys. Is that a really short, crass summary of what we're trying to say here?
I have Michael and then Barry, please.
So my recollection, again, I'm not looking at notes, is that the question that we're addressing is whether or not the trademark claims notice is effective in its intended result, which is to limit misuse of trademarks, et cetera, in domain names. Bad summary, but that's it. So the question is, if it's effective in being limited to exact matches, that should show up in there being a good number of exact match UDRPs that had to be carried out, or URSs that had to be carried out because they weren't part of the notification process. Not an exact one-to-one relationship, perhaps, but to find that information out. If the UDRPs, if challenges that have been made successfully have overwhelmingly been not exact matches but something else, then I think that the idea is that that would then support the necessity for considering broadening what would trigger a trademark claims notice. And so this is not over the effectiveness of a UDRP or URS. It's just, were they filed? Were they filed against exact matches, near matches, what kind of matches? And if they were filed, were they successful against those? And the successful, I think, goes back to a test of whether or not, there really was a problem, or if a majority of them were refused, were not good UDRPs, then it would show, the trademark claims notice was sufficient because these were unnecessary. So that's what it was intended to test. And frankly, some of this questioning came out of a frustration of some weird stats that we had without having a real good handle on whether or not what we're doing now is being effective. And that's what this was intended to get at that information. Thanks.
Thank you, Michael. And I have Barry and Christine. I'm noticing that we are at the end of our time. We're getting close to the end of the survey, but at any rate, let me go to Barry and then Christine.
Thank you, Barry Cobb, for the record. And this is just for this team to consider in terms of trying to shorten the size of the survey. But note that when the working group returns back to the TMCH data analysis, first you'll recall, we've got the quantity of URS cases filed. Since then, I've also extracted out all of the new GTLD UDRP cases filed so that we have quantities of both, all up to 2017. The idea is that when I can free my hands up from URS, that we're going to get a refresh of data from the TMCH database for all the notices that were sent and align that with the domains that were registered. and then make that comparison to the quantity of either URS cases filed or UDRP cases filed, noting that, you know, while that's close to perfect alignment, you know, it won't ever be exactly perfect alignment, as Christine notes that, you know, they could have got a notice, but maybe they waited 3 months before they filed the UDRP, so you can't say for certain. So I just thought I'd let you consider that. Thank you.
Thank you, Barry. And Christine?
Thanks. This is Christine. I'm not going to repeat all the comments I made in the chat, except I want to add that, of course, there's other factors. You know, there can be 900 domain names that are infringe a trademark, but you choose not to file them for many, many, many reasons. That doesn't mean they're not infringing. It just means there's a lot of reasons why you choose not to file. So you can't say that this is, you can't judge the effectiveness of the notices based on what a domain name, what a trademark holder decides to do. I think that's one tricky problem. I love that Barry's suggestion. That's the other thing I wanted to say. I think that at a minimum we can get rid of the bottom three rows of these tables and ask some questions about what you did after you received a NORN, which I thought is what we were trying to do here, was after you've received a NORN, what have you done? And these questions are flipped completely around, like, have you ever brought a UDRP or URS? Yes. Have you done it when you brought a NORN? Yes. Have you done it because it was an exact match? Yes. The two aren't related in these tables at all. So we need to figure out, I don't know whether it's come back another day or what, but we've got to figure out how we can address this, because this can't go as it is. It's wrong as it is. Thanks.
Thank you. So given the time, let me ask this at the risk of driving us all crazy. I think Michael is typing, so I'll see what he has to say as well. But do we want to undertake one more call, both to hear some more suggestions from Greg and Stacy as far as how to break up this survey, then also perhaps to finish out this survey, and maybe even, you know, anyway, let me just ask. So Christine says, I suggest an email first. The time frame for our analysis group is really to get all these surveys out as quickly as possible, and I think the idea was to release them when they're ready to release, but we do still need to, you know, get the final versions for maybe some beta testing, so, and we need to get a sense of the time from analysis group on that as well, now that they've had comments back from us. So, but Mike,
Julie?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Lori, I know, yes, if you could wait, Lori.
I'll wait after Michael, no problem.
Let me go to Michael, thanks.
My quick comment is I think we need to schedule one more call to cover this and the other survey, and I would be interested in what approach Christine or others may have to get this information, or if it's covered, if Q27 is sufficient. I don't think it is. I think it's opinion question down there. Somehow we need to get at the best metrics that we can, and yes, there are other reasons, Christine, for why I would or would not file an opposition or a UDRP. The closest we can get is what was filed and whether or not the trademark notice, the way that it's set up, if we can say that it's effective or not. And I think that's a question we've been asked. So anything you can put together that we can get at that, I'm happy with. Thanks.
Thank you. Can I suggest perhaps that I see what you're writing in the chat, Christine, that we do try to do something online, Stacy, if you can consult with Greg and see if they're if we can have whatever has been finalized, perhaps ready any other suggestions for, say, how to break up this survey, ready to review with the possibility of holding a call at the time of the full working group meeting next Wednesday, which is 1700 UTC. We do also have a document subteam call scheduled at that same time, but I think that's what we did last week, and that seemed to work out okay. So see rewrites. And see maybe some suggested language with respect to this. If we don't need that call, we can cancel it. I know, Lori, you said you can't meet next Wednesday at all, but if others can, then maybe we'll hold that open in case we do need another call. Michael, I see your hand is still up.
Oh, no, that's still old. Sorry.
Okay, well, thank you, everyone. I've now got 6 minutes late, so thanks all for staying on. Let's go ahead and close this call. we'll schedule a placeholder call for next Wednesday. We'll see if we can proceed also online so that perhaps we don't need it. Thank you, everyone, for joining. We hope you have a great weekend. And
thank you.
We will talk next week or not.
Great.
Bye.
Thanks, Julie. Thanks, all.
Thanks, everyone. Bye-bye.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Please remember to disconnect all lines and have a wonderful rest of your day.